Thank you for joining us again for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. Satellite Nation is a weekly call-in show geared towards the hobby side of all things television. Brought to you by Satellite Guys Radio. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Brian.
Good evening, Satellite Nation. I'm Michael Graves, KE4EST.
And I'm Brian Gould, Titanium Satellite. Welcome to Satellite Nation. Now, tonight, Dave from GotCBand.com has contributed an interview taped last week at the CES Consumer Electronics Show down in Las Vegas with EchoStar and their new Sage project integrating home automation.
And later on the show, we're going to have Chris Lee. Now, he's better known as Update Lee on several Satellite Guys forums, or several Satellite forums. I'm used to him on Satellite Guide, but anyway, he's been joining us from Canada, and we're going to be discussing PCI and PCIe cards and USB with the, you know, DVB-S and S2 tuners. And what are they? What are these things? Why would I just want to use them? And are they better? Are they worse? Let's find out.
Yeah, it should be a real interesting show. Now, Update Lee, Chris, is very knowledgeable when it comes to Linux integration, but he has a lot of background information on these cards. So really looking forward to talking to him in a little bit. Now, get ready, guys. Call in for our live show. We're live today, January 14th, 2015. And let's talk DVB-S S2 tuners on your computer, or really any other technology that's on your mind. You can call toll-free 877-SAT-GUYS. That is 877-728-4897. Now, international callers, or if you have an unlimited calling plan and you want to just save us a few dimes, give us a call, 347-327-9319.
I think that everybody's got unlimited anymore, don't they?
Yep.
Now, if you happen to miss the show, Satellite Nation, you can always head on over to Satellite Guys at the radio forums over there at satelliteguys.us, and you'll always find the archive a little while after the show. And, hey, go over to Facebook. I know most people are on Facebook, but www.facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. And like us, and we also got a Twitter page at SatNat Radio. We want to hear your questions and comments. We really enjoy it, and nobody said anything about it, so let's hear some questions.
There we go. So remember, when you go over to Facebook, you can post up a question and give us some feedback of what you want to hear on future shows. Or, you know, hopefully we got some things right, but let us know if we got some things wrong.
You don't like it, let us know.
Well, we want to give a special thanks to Scott over at SatelliteGuys.us and for carrying us on Satellite Guys Radio. You might be listening to us on Satellite Guys Radio, or you might be also listening to us on Access America. I want to give a special thanks to Ralph Black over at Access America. Now, that's a radio station that's up on Galaxy 19. It's also available on streaming. Now, Ralph and Mike Cole have a show called Sat Talk, and they're on right after this show this evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you don't have anything going on in about an hour from now, catch Sat Talk Radio, and they always have a great show going on over there. We want to thank KE4EST and his store, www.nc-electronics.com. So KE4EST, that would be you, Michael.
That would be me, and let's thank Dave from GotCBand.com, too, for using his IFCAS server. And let's not forget about your website there, Brian, at TitaniumSatellite.com.
I guess all these websites help pay the bills, so we just want to thank everybody who helps make this show possible. Now, let's get a little into what Dave did last week down at CES. We had talked about this interview, but we didn't get to it last time. We kind of ran short on time.
Yeah, something about the SAGE, and I was trying to find if that's an acronym for something, but that's home automation through, I guess, really SAGE is only, what, through your hopper.
Right. It's a very interesting product. Scott talked about it a little last week, and he had some really good insights on it and, you know, some pluses and some minuses. But, hey, it's a big company backing up a home automation, and you can't fight the fact that a lot of people have these hoppers and stuff in their homes.
Right. And you can go in and you can be anywhere, you know. You can be across the country and think, oh, I forgot to do something or this or that, and you can go on your tablet, bring it up, log into your hopper, and turn a light on or whatever you want to do on your security system.
Boy, somebody should check into me once in a while and turn my light on.
Feed the dog.
Well, hey, let's go ahead and let's roll that interview. So this is an interview that Dave from Got C-Band did. Now, in the future, he's going to be doing some news segments for us, but this evening he's got this over our way. So it's going to be about 10 minutes long, so we'll get back to you live here in about 10 minutes. So roll in the interview.
And so we're at the EchoStar booth with Sage, and so tell us about this.
Okay, well, Sage is a new entry for us into the home automation and monitoring market. We plan for it to be very affordable. We wanted to come out and be disruptive in the market with the price point.
Okay.
It's integrated into your television viewing experience for the first time, so you can be watching TV, and we'll pass the video from your existing set-top box to the television through Sage so that you can bring up these controls you see on the screen and control your devices and get alerts and pop-ups and things.
Okay, so say I have cable, right? And
right.
I have HDMI coming out.
Right.
HDMI into the Sage box.
That's
and then
correct.
HDMI out of the Sage box to the
into
TV.
The television. That's
okay,
correct.
Okay, great.
All right. And we also have a feature that it works on mobile devices as well. And we have a feature called My Local 911 that we're really excited about, where if my home's in Atlanta, right now I'm in Las Vegas. If I got an alert and looked at my camera and saw that someone was in my house that shouldn't be, I can press call 911, and instead of connecting me to Las Vegas 911, it'll connect me to my Atlanta 911.
Really?
They will see my physical home address in Atlanta, and then I'm talking to them, telling them, hey, I'm the homeowner. I see someone in my house, please respond. And they will respond in force because they'll know it's a real verified emergency versus a possible false alarm, which they get a lot with monitoring services.
Mm-hmm. And so for that, is there any fee for that, or is that just a monthly fee?
Well, I think they're still working out whether there'll be a fee for that one or not. That's
okay.
Still in the works.
Gotcha.
The other thing is we're making it super easy to use and install. So we plan to target anybody to be able to use this. Do-it-yourselfers that can do the install and not just techie do-it-yourselfers, but anybody. So we plan to have help steps on the screen, videos that you can watch, how-to videos to watch and see how to install our devices. And we have a lot of devices that solve problems where you don't ever have to touch any AC wiring or hire an electrician to install them. So, like, we've got an outdoor camera that we've solved the problem of powering by having a flat Ethernet cable that you can install the outdoor camera outside, put the flat Ethernet cable over the top of the window and close it up and bring it into a module inside. So all the data between the module and the camera and the power are over a cable. And then it speaks over Wi-Fi to the router. That
okay.
way you don't have to have strong Wi-Fi signal outside either, which can be a big problem.
Yeah, okay.
We also have a wireless light switch that we've designed, the EchoStar design, that you can take your existing faceplate off of a light switch on the wall, put this faceplate over it, and then put this on and control lights wirelessly. So you just turn your existing power switch on, cover it up, and then you can control that wirelessly with this device.
Oh, slick. So there's no rewiring. You're just taking
the
plate cover off.
That's correct. Just
take
the plate cover off and then pair this to your light bulb and control it using this device.
Nice, because a lot of the other solutions, you actually have to take it out of the wall,
right.
Wire it, and most
That's
people
right.
don't feel comfortable with
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So we didn't want people to do that, that don't feel comfortable, or we didn't want to have to hire an electrician because it costs money.
Oh, yeah.
So we
yeah.
made it very easy to do.
And so is the thing here, is that going to be like a starter kit? To get
yep.
started, you'll get the Sage and maybe a couple
That's correct.
Adapters?
That's correct. So you'll have the Sage with a couple of different kinds of devices in. I think we're planning two different possible starter kits now. And then also have the ability to go ahead and purchase additional devices a la carte.
Okay. Oh, so you're actually going to have light bulbs.
Yep, light bulbs, motion sensors, cameras.
Oh, nice. Are those going to be LED, I wonder?
Yes, plan to be for those to be LED. That's correct.
Okay. And so then over time, you'll have all kinds of modules. I'm looking up at the wall, and they've got one for your door to do your door,
right.
Doorbell.
Contact sensor to door, window, thermostat, the door lock. We've got a module we designed that goes inside your doorbell casing that detects when someone rings the doorbell, so you can get an alert that your doorbell's been rung on your television or your mobile, and this is it here. So very, very easy to install. We go through the steps and say hook white to this white, you know, the white, yellow, green to tell you which wires to hook it to.
Yeah.
Then you can either enclose it inside or put it on top if you need, depending on what's the easier. And then you can set up the rules engine, which we've got a set of rules engine. So once you've installed a device, you can go through a very conversational language of what do you want that device to do. So you can say, I've got this doorbell module. I want it to give me an alert on my television and my mobile device when someone rings the doorbell. And if you have a camera installed looking at your front door, you can also have that camera video pop up in a small screen so that you can see who's there and decide if you even want to go answer the door or not.
Oh, slick. So I was wondering about that. So say you have a door sensor. Your kids get home from school, open the door.
Right.
Then could you have it automatically kick on the video?
You could.
You can see.
Yep. You could You could have a rule set up to where it automatically kicks on that video.
Okay.
So you can see who it is. And you can say, oh, that's my kid. I expected that. Or, wow, that's not someone that should be there.
Yeah.
Then you use our call 911 feature.
Definitely. So now inside the house, what kind of wireless is that using for the actual modules? Is that like Wi-Fi or is that going to be like 900 megahertz? Or?
It's Wi-Fi. It's Zigbee.
Zigbee, it's, okay.
Yeah, and we have Z-Wave hardware as well and Bluetooth.
Oh, so it's a,
but right,
several.
Right, it's several. We put them all in because you don't always know which devices are going to support what, so we put them all in to be able to support whatever devices we need to.
Now I got to ask you this. So say you already have some Z-Wave stuff. Would that be able to work with the Sage box?
So what we're trying to do is qualify all our devices and put on there that Sage work. They're approved by Sage because we want to be very secure, right? We're very security conscious. EchoStar has a really long history with security. So we're trying to go through and do security audits and make sure that all that data is encrypted properly so that no one can breach your system and see any private information or just, you know, play pranks on you.
Yeah.
So we want to control which devices are approved and have people buy those.
Okay, but you guys are open to letting other people.
You know, if we support that kind of device, it may work. We won't have proven it'll work, but it may work. There's other kinds where maybe we don't have that software support yet, and it wouldn't work. So.
Gotcha. Now, say you have like a Dishno or a Hopper. At some point, will they maybe put the Sage software on the Hopper, so you won't have the Sage box if you already have a Hopper? Or
see what you're at. Yeah, I don't know yet for sure. I think it certainly could be a possibility because we have a close relationship with them.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but.
Oh, very sick. And so it doesn't seem like, looking at it, I mean, really probably like 15-minute setup. I mean, it doesn't seem like it'd be all that bad.
Yeah, it's very fast. We've done time studies, and I think, you know, for me, it's probably easier because I've done it.
You're
but
the engineer.
Right, someone who buys it as a customer, like we're making it very easy and you know, probably the hardest thing will be the door lock. But other than that, it's all very simple.
Yeah, that's slick. I mean, it's a screen, and you got all your activity on it.
Right. Yep.
And then
recent activity, your current live video, so you're always able to watch your television, and then all the devices you want to control along the bottom, as well as set up your rules and your settings.
Yeah, very nice. So, I mean, I could see it, like, somebody rings my front door, I'm watching TV, and then it shoots up the camera of the door, and
I
can see who's there.
Right, and it'll have a picture-in-picture as well where we can, if you just want, say you got a camera in a room upstairs and your kids are playing and you just want to check what they're doing, you can hit PIP. See what they're doing, and then take it back down or leave it up, whatever you want to do.
Gotcha. Now, is there any kind of limitation on the amount of modules you can add to the system?
Not really. The cameras potentially, because they use a good bit of bandwidth with the video, so the camera is really probably the only one that might limit how many you can have on the bandwidth.
I was thinking more of the light bulbs, if you want to do your whole house and all light bulbs.
I don't think there's any house out there that would hit that limit.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, yeah, that's awesome. You go on vacation, check your house.
Right.
And I didn't even see. So you're going to have a thermostat then, too.
Yeah, we have a thermostat here that you can adjust remotely and control.
Oh, and so now, would you be able to access this box, like, remotely through a web page? Or is it an app? Or how does that work?
We're mainly planning to do with an app.
Okay.
So we've got an app on the iPad. But we've got an app here that with a UI that looks very similar to the television.
Oh, yeah.
So that you can come in and see all your devices and, for example, come in and, like, turn on a light.
That's awesome.
So you, no matter where you are in the world, you'll be able to do that.
Yeah.
Which is very cool. And so, yeah, you get your thermostat, and you know, I think it's reading 72 now. I should be able to. The Wi-Fi in here is competing with a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now you can see that I updated it to 71, and it dropped down. So you can do that from wherever we are. This is awesome, right? Because I leave my house a lot of times and forget to adjust my thermostat.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to be able to do it remotely. Because I'm not real big on programming them. I just like to control them manually.
Yeah.
So if I've left the house and forget, then I can do it here.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question with this app. So say you got the app closed. Would it pop up a notification if you wanted?
It would. You'd still get the pop-ups just like their normal iOS, you know, push notifications through the iOS servers. So you'd get that pop-up, okay. Then you could launch the app.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
Well, we'll look forward. And when is this going to be released?
They're planning to release this end of Q2.
Okay, and where would it be available for purchase?
Right, they're going to have a website where you can buy it. It's like that you can go buy it on, and we're trying to look at partners as well to
some
see if
retailers.
We can, retailers as well.
Very cool.
And sure, you're welcome to take these brochures and get more information from them.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Hank.
You're welcome.
Well, want to thank Dave from Got C-Band for that great interview last week from the CES show down in Las Vegas. Now, it does sound like I think we got it wrong there, Michael. It definitely sounds like it's not on Hopper yet, but there is a chance that it might come to that device in the future.
Oh, okay. I got you. Yeah, because I was reading this PDF I've got here, and it's saying it's a separate little box that you – Echo Star's selling that, yeah.
Okay. Now, the biggest part that I got a good laugh out of, did you hear that he called Dave Sir?
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Dave, we know you're listening. We're only jiving you there, bud.
Yeah, I like the part where he what did he say? He goes in and checks got the camera on the kids, see what the kids are doing.
Right. Well, yeah, pretty interesting how, this, I think it's very interesting because a big company like EchoStar is behind it. It's going to put a lot of eyes on it. And, you know, we've heard about home automation for a while, but, you know, there's really no big players. People really aren't viewing this as something that we're going to bring into our own life. It's, you know, it's that big, gigantic house on the hill. It's for somebody else. But, you know, I think this might bring it into the masses. I've been looking at a IP-controlled thermostat for my house, and I thought, boy, that'd be a pretty good idea because I don't always want my thermostat to come on at the same time because if you're anything like me, you know, working at doing sales and development and everything, you don't know when you're going to get home.
Exactly. You can always, well, I'm finally getting ready to leave, so you can punch the button to turn on, save a little energy there, not have it run all day, all that. So, yeah, it's, you know, I see a lot of the, you know, what people, I guess, now call them makers of these maker fairs and stuff, but people that build their own projects out of, you know, Raspberry Pis and things like that.
Right.
They, a lot of them people, you know, I see a lot of that because I read a lot of those forums and stuff. And a lot of people do that, that's, you know, into that. They'll take their little Arduinos and build, you know, stuff like that, and, or their Pis, like I said, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or something similar. You know. But you don't see, you know, this is what people need to bring regular person into, just plug and play, you know, instead of having to. You don't have to know how to solder or how to program or how to whatever. You just plug it in and it works, or at least we hope it does.
Right.
Anyway, or just fail.
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me about this product is, you know, there's been a lot of effort to come out with a protocol that applies across different devices. And to hear this guy come out and say, well, you know, we're going to develop our own stuff. You'll buy it from us. And yeah, we might be open to partners. I'm thinking, boy, you know, are they reinventing the wheel? And might this be the one thing that hurts them?
Yeah, it will. You know, it's that's what happened to Atari computers back in the day. They wouldn't do whatever. They was way ahead of everybody else. But they kept everything closed down tight. And guess what? Now it's, you know, Windows machines, you know, and they would probably be in the Windows instead of, you know, we might still be running Windows, but it wouldn't be Intel compatible or whatever.
Right. And add to the list a machine I had, the Amiga.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great graphics machine, but a little too closed source. But anyway, well, hey, what else are we going to be talking about this evening, Michael?
We're going to be talking about opening your computer up and plugging in a card in it to receive them signals out of the sky.
Or also hooking up a USB external device. Now, these devices, they've been around for many years, but, you know, we just started seeing some new codecs coming out that are only available, or not codecs, but we're seeing different transmissions coming up that are only available through a tuner that is connected up to your PC or streaming to a computer in the house or a client device. And so this evening, joining us from Canada is Chris Lee. And now Chris Lee is known on several forums as Update Lee. Chris, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hello, Chris. Good evening. Welcome to Satellite Nation.
Thank you.
Well, give us a little lowdown about, why should somebody consider a card to put in their computer or a USB device to connect to their computer when there are plenty of set-top boxes out there that can receive satellite programming? Why should somebody consider these devices?
Well, the set-top box is really good for that person that has one television set and the TV that they watch it on. They're interested in watching always-on programming, the stuff that's always up there. But for the person that really likes the feed hunting and everything, blind scanning one satellite, moving to the next, blind scanning another, this can take hours, and you're going to miss everything before it comes up. For me to do a spectrum scan on the DVD cards, it takes 1.2 seconds, and I can visually see with my eyes a plot of all the signals that are up there in the sky. I can easily see if a new one's there.
Then so we're talking about a complete range from IF range from 950 to 2150 in how long?
1.2 seconds for, wow. You know, for vertical, and then another 1.2 seconds for horizontal. But I think that's still pretty quick.
Oh, so you're talking about 2.4 seconds now. Okay, you're
you're
pushing it now.
Yeah,
but it's very quick to be able to spot those feeds. And, you know, of course, they just look like little spikes, but it only takes another second to click on them and see what they are and analyze those signals.
So I know that you use a Linux device, and we're going to start talking about different computers and different clients that can work with this. But is the experience very similar for a owner or a user to use it on a, once it's set up, to use it on a Linux machine versus a PC?
Yeah, as far as I know, like, I don't really do a whole lot with the Windows, but Crazy Cat has his version of the same software, you know what I mean? It does the same thing. It spectrum scans, and I assume it takes about the same amount of time. We're using the same hardware, so it really should take the same amount of time.
Right.
It is Windows software and Linux.
Go ahead, Michael.
Sorry, I missed that. What was that?
We're all talking the same time, and we all touch the same time. As Crazy Cat, did he write? You're saying he wrote his own software? He's got his own thing, or is he using a different one from you?
He wrote his own software there for Windows, and I've been always a big Linux guy, so I started writing software, and I kind of liked what he was doing, and that meant that. How I always look at it is if something could be done in Windows, there's no reason why it can't be done in Linux. But there was no Linux software that did this. So I started talking to a few people and figured it out and wrote it.
Well, let's get a little – let's learn a little bit more about who Update Lee is. Now, you know, most of us know that you're really into satellite viewing and free-to-air. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about how you got into the hobby and how you got into using satellite cards to start with.
Okay, well, I went to university for computer programming and did computer programming as a career for about 2 years and didn't really like it as a job. It was a very stressful, very high-paced environment, working ridiculously long hours for very little pay. So I got out of that, and I'm currently employed by the Canadian Forces as an infantry, and I love my job. And now I do computer programming as a hobby, and I love it because I work on projects that I am interested in. Right. And so that's how I got into programming. And satellite, well, I started off, as most people do, in set-top boxes. But I always found the feeds were the real interesting stuff. I am a big news junkie, and if anyone that's interested in news, that's where the feeds are awesome because you're seeing the raw, unedited feeds.
Agreed.
But
yes.
It takes a while to get them, to find them, and they were mysterious, and they would pop up in random places all over the place, and if you've got a motor, it takes a long time to find these feeds. So you rely on the forums, and people are really good about the forums. They post things here and there. Look at this news truck here and this news truck there. But then I realized that the set-top boxes that I were using were actually running Linux, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. So I started looking into the source code of these set-top boxes, and I was like, well, wow, I don't actually even need a set-top box. I can buy the card for like $75. It's so much cheaper, and it's so much more convenient when I'm doing it on my PC that's obviously already hooked to the internet, already hooked to my home network and everything. And then I can do all this cool stuff on the PC, and then I can stream it to other devices in my house and everything. This is amazing.
And then I remember when you first got into satellite cards, I remember back at that time, some of the bigger challenges were there were cards out there, but they didn't work too good with the software that the manufacturers gave us.
Yes. Well, like everything, when they first come out, there is no standard. So the manufacturers do whatever they want. And but a lot of manufacturers are very closed, and they don't release their APIs, and they don't release their source code. So if you had a Prof card, you used Prof software. And if you used a TBS card, you used TBS software. And this left things really wanting. They came out, Windows had some kind of really rough standards, like VDA and stuff, but they were really bad. Like, they didn't even have DISEC switching or anything. Like, so people started modifying the standard, which, of course, meant it wasn't standard anymore. And a lot of Windows stuff is closed source, and that's not really my style. I'm really about the open source. I'm about giving back to the community. And so many people have helped me out. Like, it's incredible how many people come out of the woodworks. And they're like, I'll repost a bug or something like that. I'm like, oh, this darn feed, this one transponder keeps buggering up my code. And somebody will they'll message me, and they're like, oh, that's actually my station. And they're like, so I'll look into it, and they're like, can you look into it to see if it's like a bug in us or a bug in your code? And I'll get back to them. It's usually a bug in my code.
Well, as
people come out of the woodwork to help me out, and I want to give that back.
That is so cool. Definitely, you know, yeah. I got into the cards back in 2005, approximately, with Twinhon. I worked with Twinhon quite a bit, and we were their official North American distributor, and did a lot of development with them during that time. But of course, we know the company eventually folded, and engineers moved on to some of these other cards. So, you know, players along the way have been Twinhon, Haupage, I believe I'm saying that right. Haupage?
Yeah.
Prof, Sky Star was a real big one that all of us wanted one of those cards. The Pinnacle, yeah. DVB World, TBS. And, you know, when we talk about it now, people just think, oh, all I need to do is buy a card, put it in my computer, and I'm going to receive everything. But probably the main thing that we need to put out there is not all cards are created equal.
Correct.
All has to do with what type of tuners they have, what type of demods they have. So if somebody was getting in, just saying, you know, I've been playing around with set-top boxes for a while. I want to get a card, and I just, you know, I have an older computer. I wonder if it will work. So let's talk some basics here.
Okay, well, everybody has their favorite stuff, and it is very important to do your research beforehand because there is a lot of junk out there. There is, and the problem is that it's all in the same price bracket. So there is some excellent, excellent cards out there for around $75, $80. And there's also some really junky cards.
Because we don't have any sponsors here, what would you say would be the best card for somebody just getting into putting a satellite tuner card into their computer or a USB? Where do you think people should start?
One of my favorite cards is the SkyStar 2 Express HD. It sells for about $80 with shipping. It's a PCIe card.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my fastest cards I have. It uses the latest version of the SD tuner and D-mod, the 0900, and it's very good. It does a very good job. It doesn't support some of the super and high, really cool features that you will find in like the TBS 6925 or 6983, but it will get you pretty much darn near everything up in the sky for about $80. A really good little card. Yeah. Like if you're one of these guys that wants the best of the best and you want to be able to have no signal and you can't get up there, whether it's like BCM, BCM, GS and everything else like that, then the 6983 is a great card.
This week.
But, yes. You know, this week, right?
And I'm just going to say that because I've just gotten into the habit of every 2 years about I'm buying a new card. And I went ahead and I bought the TBS 6983 because I want all the bells and whistles and I want to be able to get whatever I can now. But I just know that it's a matter of time when, you know, I know that on some engineer's bench, there is a version that's going to be giving us H265 for the 4K stuff. Well, I'm pretty convinced that the 6893 probably will not go down that path.
Well, the 6983 is using ST's very, very, very latest, just come out. They're the first card on the market to actually be utilizing this chip. It's a very good DMOD. It's the newer, greater, upgraded version of all the other ST ones that we've been seeing on the market, like the Prof 7500,
right.
TBS 5925, 6925. Very good. ST is very good about supporting their developers, having a very well-documented API. They're just very, very reliable chips. So it is the latest and greatest. Now, for ACM, VCM, the SkyStar will tune it, but only under very specific circumstances.
So I'm going to jump in.
We'll tune it under anyone.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in for a second because we're throwing some acronyms and some letters around here. And let's go ahead and talk basics for a moment. So I have a set-top box at home that I watch free-to-air programming. Now, DVB-S set-top receivers received a constant coding and modulation. It's referred to as CCM. Now, CCM was a standard on everything for years. And so you can buy a lot of cards out there. In fact, there's probably a lot of free cards out there, DVB-S cards, that, you know, will receive the bulk of what was up there before the DVB-S2 came along. Now, we came out with DVB-S2 cards. Now, along with DVB-S2, they came up with some new coding, some stuff. It's called generic stream encapsulation. Now, part of that generic stream encapsulation allows, on the DVB-S standard, you could only have one transport stream on a carrier. Well, now, with DVB-S2, you can do something that's called multi-stream. And that means you can bring in all these different transport streams from different sources and put them all on the same carrier. But guess what? The DVB-S receivers will not separate out those transport streams. And so this is an example of something that we are seeing coming along. Yes, it's more often viewed in Europe, but we do see it over here in North America occasionally, is multi-stream. Now, part of the multi-stream is they added some adaptive way or some variables into the coding and modulation. So instead of it being constant coding and modulation that was used for DVB-S2, they now introduce the availability of variable coding and modulation and adaptive coding and modulation. The difference between those two is adaptive or ACM is a kind of a two-way communication between a receiver and the uplink. And so it can adapt the amount of coding or the amount of correction that is sent out depending on the conditions at the receiving end. That's definitely more difficult to receive, but what we're seeing a lot of is variable coding and modulation, where the coding is adapted for many different variables to give the best quality of image and the best chances of it being decoded correctly. And so we've gone from a simple DVB-S to a DVB-S using constant coding and modulation, CCM, to now introducing multi-stream and variable and adaptive coding. So these are two things that the cards and the external USB tuners hooked up to a computer can now receive this multi-stream VCM and ACM. Very rarely are there any set-top boxes out there that can receive any of this type of programming.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. This is where the cards are the king. Is in the blind scanning and the feed hunting, because we get it all, where the set-top boxes are getting most of it.
Right. Now, one thing that we talked a little bit about on Satellite Guys Forum about a week or so ago was a lot of people are not aware that there is stuff up there that we can watch and listen to that isn't really sent out in real time. It's spooled out at and then reassembled, and the data is pulled out, and you then watch the file of whatever was downloaded. You can't watch it in real time. So that is something that's associated with generic stream, and you'll see it like IP delivery of programming.
Yeah, we are seeing a lot more of that, a lot more of that. It's becoming data streams are becoming a lot more prevalent up there. I think on the broadcaster side, it's just a lot more convenient. We're seeing a lot more of the broadcasters sending things over the satellite in the format that they're going to be intended on the receiving end. Instead of receiving it as just standard satellite and then converting it to IP,
right,
or converting it, like another one we're seeing is ATSC signals sent over satellite. So instead of the broadcasters, sorry? What was that?
I ain't that way. Kind of way Brian Arrowhead's doing theirs. Are kind of just, it's going to be spoiled out so much at a time, and then you can see it once it gets downloaded. So that's why they got such a small bandwidth.
Yeah. Like that is one big advantage. If something doesn't need to be live, but you want to be able to send it in extremely good quality, and you don't want to pay for a 30 megahertz worth of bandwidth on a satellite, which is incredibly expensive, you can just have like a 5 megahertz block, and it will take six times longer over IP to receive it.
If you're not running real time, who cares? Have a file that you pull up when you need it.
Yeah, real time, you have to. You're going to have to pay for that 30 megahertz. But not real time, it doesn't matter. Why don't you go for the cheaper bandwidth?
Right.
And give your company some money.
Now, I'm just going to mention that Rick's forum is, you have a great bit of information over there, and there's a lot of guys dedicated to looking for these type of feeds, and it's a great forum to check out. I know you're a very active member over there.
Yeah, I try. No particular reason other than it just seems like a lot of the Linux developers seem to hang out there. So, and he's been very supportive of like letting me just run with the forum and just have topics on whatever I want. He doesn't seem to care. So it's very nice.
Yeah. Right.
we get on to topics about very technical stuff.
Yes.
It's
very.
Okay. He doesn't mind it. It's perfectly fine with him. So that's great.
So going back to your program, what is the name of the program that you've developed for Linux users?
I called it Update DVB. I don't know. In Windows, there was a program called Smart DVB. So I thought, well, my nickname is Update Lee, so I'll just pick Update DVB.
Okay.
Kind of rhymed. So,
tell us if you have a good quality card Give us some examples of what you can use your software for or your application for, and kind of the experience for a user once they put this card in a computer.
Well, the first thing you need to do is install my modified kernel. Basically, the Linux kernel is very standardized. They don't really like a lot of experimentation. Everything that's in the kernel has to be tried and true and solid and stable. And that means that me changing APIs and adding new features like spectrum scan, blind scan, and IQ plot are tough to get into the kernel. So I just decided to fork the kernel and I made my own kernel.
Okay.
So that's the first thing you need to install so that you can use all these great features. And then once that's installed, you just install Update DVB. And it's designed more around the person that's looking for, like, feed hunting and a guy that's really interested in analyzing signals. I know I'm kind of a geek that way, but I've always found the analyzing of the signal often is more interesting than the actual content of the video itself.
Hey,
but once you analyze it, then you can view it. You can stream it over your local, you know, network. I guess you could stream it over the internet too if you had a ridiculously high internet connection. But yeah, you know, like it's designed so that you can either watch it locally or you can stream it to another device.
Or I imagine you could even transcode it using your own computer and take it down to a lower resolution to stream it out.
Yeah, and there are guys that do that, that use it for that, and so that they can go over the internet with a more reasonable bit rate.
Right.
But, yeah.
So for example,
scan, and you can actually see the plot and everything, and or you can blind scan, like, you know, completely blind, or it even does a smart scan, which is it does a spectrum scan first, and then it only checks the transponders where there's peaks. So that's an even much faster blind scan because it's not just actually blindly looking for signals. It's kind of an intelligent scan. It's only looking where there is signal because there will be no signal where there's no signal. So.
Hence, you can scan a complete polarity in less than 2 seconds.
Yeah, very fast. And,
now,
very good.
An example, if somebody uses your software and will point out that there is another application called Crazy Scan that does something very similar for PC folks.
Yeah.
Once you do a blind scan of the satellite, or you do spectrum scan, it takes a whole, under 2 seconds. You scan and you see a peak and you know that it is a carrier. How do you tune in that carrier once you see it graphically plotted on your screen?
Super easy. Click on it. It's just that easy.
Okay.
It'll automatically look within a 10 megahertz bandwidth, you know, minus 10 megahertz, plus 10 megahertz. So, you know, for most signals, you don't even have to be that accurate with your mouse. Just click roughly near it, and it will find it.
So I would say this is about the closest that we're coming so far to SDR, software-defined radio, for satellite television.
Always thinking the exact same thing, man.
Yeah. Basically, I tried to make the software it's customizable and usable for people that are looking for feed and everything like that. But it is all open source. And the great thing about it is other people have come to me and they're like, can you add this feature? And I'm like, awesome, I will add it. And other people come to me and they're like, can you add this feature? And I'm like, honestly, it's not really something that is conducive to where I want the program to go. And then they just modify it themselves.
Right.
Hey, that's the great thing about open source. You're not stuck with whatever you're given.
Right.
If you don't like it, just change it.
Right. Hey, I'm going to go ahead and I don't know if anybody has any questions, but let's throw the phone number out there one more time.
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUYS or 877-728-4897.
All right, guys. So if you have any questions about tuners that you can connect up to your PC or to your Linux, or even they have devices that you can put these cards inside of a streaming box and then use clients. An example of that is the TBS Moi, and that's French, spelled M-O-I. They have the Moi Plus, and I don't know, Chris, do you speak French?
No.
Okay. I don't know. Sorry.
As a good Canadian, I probably should, but I don't.
Sorry. I apologize. You're Canadian. Yeah. So anyway,
I just want to add though that this update DVD not only works for satellite tuners, but it also does work for over the air tuners too.
So if you have an ATSC or a DVB-T?
Yeah, ATSC as well. Yeah. So it does the same spectrum scan for many, many tuners. Now, I don't support them all, but, I only support the ones I own. But I've got support for about four or five of them, I think, right now.
And which ones, off the top of the head, which ones are those that you support?
The Hopodge 950Q is a very popular one. It's mm-hmm. one of my best cards. Also, the Aero M. The K-World makes a few of them. They're not the best quality ones, but they're really cheap. They're like $19. It's crazy.
Wow. That's a DVB-S too?
No, those are all ATSC.
ATSC.
Ones.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And you can
check
those too. So that you can just hook it up to your antenna and just do a spectrum scan. And it will show you the graphical representation of all the peaks in the area. And you can also blind scan. I don't even know if there is any other software that blind scans ATSC.
No,
which,
no, they just jump. Work. They just jump in chunks. Yeah,
yeah. But you can blind scan with it, so that if you're in a new, if you have, because they're all USB tuners, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a laptop or whatever, and you're in a different town and you want to see what's there, you can just do a spectrum scan or a blind scan, and it'll pick up all the channels that are in that area. So,
and then I guess take this one step farther. If you go out to your dish, stream it out to your tablet or your Android phone even.
Yeah.
Very cool. Now, let's address a couple of things. People say, okay, what are some of the problems I might run into? I'm just going to point out there that in the past, I know a couple of the cards had some problems with BIOS computers. So please do be aware if you're out there shopping for cards, that, you buy your card from somebody who you know who they are, and they're, you can return it if it doesn't work. I got
always deal with a reputable dealer. I'm telling you, there is, in this industry, there is so many people out there just trying to make a quick dollar, and you'll never hear from them again, and you'll never get your money back. But I tell you, a reputable dealer will save you money tenfold over in
exactly.
the long run.
You know, for
and
example, my experience,
like, to ask questions and have them answer you.
Yep.
Oh,
my
so
experience with TBS is a couple years, about a year ago, I had bought a card that wasn't compatible with my Windows 7. They had recommended some BIOS upgrades. We just couldn't get it to work, but they were really good at communicating with me, and they gave me my money back. So when it came time to buy the 6983, who do you think I went to? I can't say, TBS, a great outfit to buy from. Now, also in the past, we had problems with these cards not providing enough power to power LNBs, motors, switches, etc. The general warning is, of course, you don't want to put too much on any device, whether it be a set-top box or one of these cards. But some of the newer cards now have power coming off of the computer's power supply rather than being drawn through the PCI or PCIe ports.
You know, a lot of the older generation cards, like the Prof 7301 and the 8000, they just took their power right from the PCI bus, which honestly is not designed for that kind of a load.
Absolutely not.
The newer ones like the SkyStar, your TBS 6925 and 6983, they have a power plug on them, right on the back of them, and that's the way to do it. Now, I still have a spawn-powered multi-switch, and I like it because it powers the LNBs, which in some cases, some of these LNBs are pretty big power hogs.
Yeah.
And in that way, the cart only has to power the motor.
Right.
A lot less strain on it if you're using a C-band one or whatever, then obviously it's not even powering that.
I just want to put out there, anybody, it doesn't matter if you have a set-top box or a PCI card, one of the biggest problems you're going to create for yourself is putting too many LNBs plus a motor plus switches. Definitely, like Chris is saying, buy yourself a power inserter.
Set-top boxes have the same problem. It's no different. You see this all the time, and the biggest part where you see it is on your 18-volt switching.
Yep.
You know, your polarity switching, people say, like, oh, it seems to lose its lock sometimes. Well, but only on one polarity. Well, that's a good indicator right there.
But I can cook a hamburger on the top of my set-top box.
yeah, that was right.
And you know, like, that's the thing, too. Like, heat kills electronics.
Yep.
Like, these people, like, they complain that, oh, it works fine, but it's too hot to touch.
Yeah.
Well, it probably won't work fine for very long.
Now, one of the weaknesses that we've always identified, and you brought it up earlier, was a lot of these cards have trouble with DISEC control, whether it be motor 1.2 or USOLs, or whether it be a 1.0 or 1.1 for switches. How would you address that with these cards? Are there differences between cards, or is this more of the software or the app being used?
I can't really speak for Windows, so I don't know. But in Linux, I have never experienced any problems at all. So not 100% sure, but it's leading me to believe that it's either how Windows handles it or how the software sends the commands to the drivers. But in Linux, I really had no problem at all.
Okay.
DISEC is a very tight requirement. And the problem is that it lists out very, very specific details about how long to wait after any command is sent, et cetera, before the next command is sent, how long to wait after you switch voltage, how long to wait after you send a tone, the gap between the tone and the command, and then the tone again. And my only guess is that some of the Windows software isn't waiting long enough. That's it. Because different switches take different amount of time. And I've had to set in my program the delays a little bit longer than specification, just because people were saying sometimes it missed commands, and I increased the wait, and now it works. So that's my only guess, is that maybe they're reading the specifications is a little too literal, and then maybe they need to give these switches just a little more time than maybe they're supposed to, but give them a little more time to wait and before you send the next command.
Okay. Now,
same thing with switching voltages. Like, a lot of software is written for LNBS. But if you have a servo, you need a significantly longer wait time before you switch polarity.
Right.
Like in my software there, I only wait 50 milliseconds for an LNBF to switch its voltage. And that seems to be fine for all the LNBs I've used. But I have to wait 500 milliseconds, you know, a half a second, for a servo. Because the servo doesn't turn. In,
right.
You know. 1/50th of a second. It needs about a half a second.
That's okay.
Still pretty fast, but this, it needs more time.
This question is killing me. Have you used your setups with the Titanium ASC1? Success,
I sure have.
Or not?
Oh, 100% success.
Okay. And you and
device.
I just want to say,
you
and I did not talk about this beforehand, so that was just a shot in the dark. But I took a lot of effort when I was coming up with, you know, my DISEC implementation. And so I'm very curious, because you are a DISEC expert. Just wanted to know if it worked fine.
The only thing I had to change in my software was the servo code to wait 500 seconds. That has nothing to do with the ESC1 at all. That has all to do with the fact that the servo is a mechanical motor that's turning instead of an electronic switch. So the ASC1 has been very good. I do almost all my computer work remotely. My computers are set up in the garage. My dishes are all on the back of the garage. And then I have a network run out there, and I do all my work on my laptop in my living room where it's nice and warm.
Okay. Yes. Hey,
I'm up in Edmonton, Alberta. Our winters are below zero, like below freezing, for 6 to 8 months of the year. So.
And I was feeling sorry for myself, because we got down to 19 last night. Okay. Hey, Chris, we're starting to run short. We're starting to run a little short of time. But I just wanted to put out there, if somebody is interested in your program or interested in the hobby, how can people get a hold of you to get a copy of your program for their Linux machine?
Well, you can either find me on any of the forums. I'm on most of them. Or you can go to bitbucket.org/updatelead, and you will find all my open source projects on that site.
Very good. Well, hopefully this evening we've kind of put a couple bugs in people's ears about why they might want to consider.
I'm just trying to tower in.
Oh, boy, we're out of time. Okay, we'll bring that caller in. A caller from area code 212. Turn down your audio, and do you have a question?
Yeah, real quick, I just wanted to know if Update Lee has considered releasing his software as an ISO that people that aren't that experienced with Linux could install on a computer, so you don't have to go through all the process of building everything. Because, you know, that's one of the problems with the TBS tuners is that their drivers have to be rebuilt every time you get a kernel update. So it would be nice if there was like a distribution that was intended for this sort of thing.
Okay, you have 1 minute there.
Okay, well, that isn't something I had considered doing before, but honestly, it wouldn't be that terribly hard. It's something I will definitely add to the to-do list to consider because it would make it a lot easier for many people that understand the satellite market but don't understand Linux as well. Because, yes, compiling software in Linux is not something that the average user does all the
right.
time. So I understand that. So, yeah, that might be a better way to get even more usage of the my software out there.
Definitely. Thanks for calling with that suggestion. All right. Well, this evening we have been privileged to have Chris Lee, Update Lee, join us and to talk a little bit about TV tuners, satellite tuners and ATSC tuners and how they can be integrated into your computer. Thank you so much for being with us this evening, Chris.
Oh, yeah, very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. Now, guys, we're running out of time, but we are going to visit this subject again in the future. But next week, who do we have, Michael?
Mario Felipe, if I'm saying it right. Felipe or something. We're going to be discussing SDR, software-defined radio, next week.
Now, if you haven't caught him, he's a contributor for Tele Audio Vision and the Spectrum Monitor. Both have articles by him this month. So to prep up for next week's show, check out his articles, and he's going to be talking about software-defined radio, SDR. Thanks for listening, guys.
Tonight. Join Satellite Guys Michael and Brian next Wednesday for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. And don't forget to like our page at facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. Until next week, good night.